Okay, so the chapter opens with Aragorn running towards Aman Hen. He sees Frodo's footprints in the river and starts going back downhill, but he desires to go to the Seat of Seeing, and then he's seeing this Eagle Land as well at the time, and then you want to take this quote here?
Even as he gazed, his quick ears caught sounds in the woodlands below, on the west side of the river. He stiffened. There were cries, and among them, to his horror, he could distinguish the harsh voices of orcs. Then suddenly, with a deep-throated call, a great horn blew, and the blasts of it smote the hills and echoed in the hollows, rising in a mighty shout above the roaring of the falls.
"The horn of Boromir," he cried. "He is in need." He sprang down the steps and away, leaping down the path. "Alas, an ill fate is on me this day, and all I do goes amiss. Where is Sam?"
As he ran, the cries came louder, but fainter now, and desperately the horn was blowing. Fierce and shrill rose the yells of the orcs, and suddenly the horn calls ceased. Aragorn raced down the last slope, but before he could reach the hill's foot, the sounds died away. And as he turned to the left and ran towards them, they retreated, until at last he could hear them no more. Drawing his bright sword and crying, "Elendil, Elendil," he crashed through the trees.
Clifford, we're back again.
Indeed we are. Beginning
another episode.
The third book. The second physical book, but the third book.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited.
I am too. As we were just saying, it felt really good to get through Fellowship of the Ring. And now we're in for a change of setting and mixing up the characters a little bit. Yeah, things are getting pretty exciting.
Since we've done The Hobbit and we did The Fellowship, we do feel like we're halfway through the show now. It's all downhill from here. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, whether that's true or not, probably isn't. But we're in a good mood and we're ready to do this. Even though this chapter topic, like the main topic of this chapter is not a cheery one. But you want to take us for Cliff's notes?
Sure. So, where we left off at the very end of the Fellowship of the Ring, Aragorn was rushing uphill in this chaos that ensued, searching for Frodo. So, Aragorn continues, as we start the third book, continues rushing up to the top of Emon Hen, wishing to sit in the Chair of Seeing. As soon as he arrives, however, cries of orcs and Boromir's famous horn draw him down again. By the time he reaches Boromir, it is too late. The hobbits are nowhere to be seen. Legolas and Gimli arrive, and they bear Boromir's body down to the river to give him a funerary send-off down the Anduin. They guess Frodo's course, but resolve to find Merry and Pippin, who seem to have been captured by orcs. Aragorn, Legolas, and Gimli gather a few belongings and set off running through the woods in the dark.
All right, so yeah, let's jump into it. We're going to separate this episode. We're going to cover all the Boromir stuff first, and then we'll cover the decision about what's going on with who are they going to follow and try to save or help out or whatnot in the second half. So to start that first Boromir part, we got to read, let's just read it straight up.
Which I guess we maybe have talked around it. Boromir's dead.
Yeah. Well, you said that they had the funeral there.
A mile, maybe, from Parth Galen in a little glade not far from the lake, he found Boromir. He was sitting with his back to a great tree, as if he was resting. But Aragorn saw that he was pierced with many black-feathered arrows. His sword was still in his hand, but it was broken near the hilt. His horn, cloven in two, was at his side. Many orcs lay slain, piled all about him and at his feet. Aragorn knelt beside him. Boromir opened his eyes and strove to speak. At last, slow words came. "I tried to take the ring from Frodo," he said. "I am sorry. I have paid." His glance strayed to his fallen enemies. 20 at least lay there. "They have gone, the halflings. The orcs have taken them. I think they are not dead. Orcs bound them." He paused, and his eyes closed wearily. After a moment he spoke again. "Farewell, Aragorn. Go to Minas Tirith and save my people. I have failed."
No, said Aragorn, taking his hand and kissing his brow. You have conquered. Few have gained such a victory. Be at peace. Minas Tirith shall not fall.
Boromir smiled.
Which way did they go? Was Frodo there? Said Aragorn.
But Boromir did not speak again.
Alas, said Aragorn, thus passes the heir of Denethor, lord of the Tower of Guard. This is a bitter end. Now the company is all in ruin. It is I that have failed. Vain was Gandalf's trust in me. What shall I do now? Boromir has laid it on me to go to Minas Tirith, and my heart desires it. But where are the ring and the bear? How shall I find them and save the quest from disaster? Okay, big section.
Mm-hmm.
Initial thoughts?
Well, tragic, of course, that we've lost Boromir. And it seems like we've at least picked up the context clues that he lost a battle against orcs who have now escaped.
Yeah.
With halflings undisclosed, which halflings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although we can recall from the last chapter when they all left camp, Aragorn was giving out orders, right?
All right. Don't worry about the halflings. Okay. Just Boromir himself. What do you think of Boromir dying?
It sounds like he had a kind of valiant death, slayed all these orcs ahead of him, in front of him, and was just totally overwhelmed. That said, it looks like he died fighting alone, and this was not a battle. This seems more a little bit like an ambush or something like that. So, it's a mixed bag, I'd say. Seems valiant, but it's not maybe the type of valiant that he would have hoped for.
Yeah, and any thoughts on the little exchange there between him and Aragorn?
At least Boromir totally, he makes peace at the end.
Yeah.
He comes clean, and Aragorn, to his credit, just takes it totally at face value. Aragorn in this section seems like kind of amazingly frank. Like we hear Aragorn's thoughts and his conflicts. And he doesn't even hesitate to, like, scold Boromir or think ill of him for lunging for Frodo's ring.
Yeah.
You know, he just completely he's, like, full forgiveness and acceptance as Boromir's dying.
So I think with this, obviously I had to read this, like, I'm not coming up with this stuff myself, but this is in Joseph Pierce's books. He remarkably, and I think this was actually intentional on Tolkien's part, he compares this to the sacrament of confession or reconciliation, and like this really does have all the important elements of that, and I think that was probably intentional on Tolkien's part about what this is supposed to be. So you go to confession to be absolved of your sins, because like everybody's gonna screw up and sin and stuff, so then you go there, and then the priest, functioning as Christ in that situation because he's ordained and he can do that, is able to forgive your sins, and then you can kind of go about your day and then feel much better.
Right, I think the basic premise being that, like, if you can acknowledge to yourself and say it aloud, coming clean
right
with whatever you've done, that is at least the first step to like resolving however you've sinned.
Right. Well, so there's three parts to it. Like, all three are necessary too. So first you have the act of contrition, which means like you're actually sorry. Like you're coming here and you do want to repent. Then you have to actually confess what you did. So how did you screw up? Like, what was your sin? And then with that, you either have done or you plan to do some sort of penance for it. And, like, you recognize that the penance is good and helps you move on. Okay?
So it sounds like we might have that here.
Right. Well, so in the last chapter we saw it, Frodo bolts and Boromir trips himself, and then he comes back to his normal mind, right? And you already get the sense that he's sorry there. When he shows up with the companions later there, he's sulking around and he seems very embarrassed and sad and pissed off at himself for all his actions, right? And then now we see it seems he's died fighting, defending the hobbits and who were taken captive by orcs. So in this situation, Aragorn's actually acting like the priest. Where he's the one that's just going to hear the confession and be able to, like, you know, he's just like he's the Christ figure that can absolve the sins here. And so he hears Boromir say, I tried to take the ring from Frodo. So there's a confession right away, right? I am sorry. There's the contrition. And then he says, I have paid. So he's acknowledging, you know, and expiating his sins through this penance. And like, in this case, the penance is really, really harsh. Obviously, he's about to pass away.
Right. And do you feel like, is that fully... basically his penance for the sin of trying to take the ring from Frodo is that he's sacrificing his life? Or was his penance just trying to defend Merry and Pippin, and it's simply kind of honor that he died in the process?
I mean, it goes with both. You know, it's obviously laying down your life to protect your friends too. That's like the highest form of love that you can show as well. So even if it's not particularly part of this, you know, and it's not just doing something, it's acknowledging that that was good, like, and that helped you. They kept using the word satisfaction in some weird way that I don't fully understand. So somebody can look that up for themselves if they're super interested in that.
Satisfaction, maybe in the sense that you're following through.
Yeah, it was weird though. I don't know. What did you think of Aragorn's last words though?
Regarding Boromir?
Well, what he said to Boromir. Yeah, just any like what he said to Boromir. His last words there.
Like I said, this is like full compassion on display with regard to Boromir and his life. He's not even thinking for a second about Boromir's shortcomings.
Well, what do you think he means when he says, "You've conquered, few have gained such a victory"? I mean, he's about to die, and the Hobbits
perhaps
are taken.
He's saying, "You have conquered the pull of the ring," like to have acknowledged that you misstepped and were drawn in by the power of the ring, and to have understood that, and then, as we were saying, kind of attempting to repent for that is a victory that few people who are alive have managed to pull off. You know,
sure.
There's a very limited number of characters who we know who have sort of fallen under the spell of the ring and managed to escape it or acknowledge their failure.
Joseph Pierce, he just has this really good passage in the book, and I just want to read it, his words, because he just nailed it right here. So he says about this, he says that Aragorn's reply to Boromir's final words fulfills the role of Christ, acting through the ordained ministry of the priest and absolving the penitent of his sin. After Boromir laments his failure, Aragorn takes his hand, kisses his brow, and responds with the words of comfort and absolution. No, you have conquered. Few have gained such a victory. Be at peace. Minas Tirith shall not fall. As Boromir hears Aragorn's words, he smiles. This is his last act before he dies. Clearly, the conquest and victory Aragorn speaks of must be the spiritual victory over sin, because, in a purely worldly sense, Boromir indeed has failed. The hobbits have been taken prisoner or disappeared, and the fellowship has been broken. This is not a victory in any worldly sense, but rather a resounding defeat. In Christian terms, however, having made such a contrite confession of his sin and having paid by laying down his life for his friends, he has indeed conquered and won a great victory, though it required the grace of God, represented symbolically by the presence of Aragorn in the persona Christi, serving as a figure of Christ, whose absolution, be at peace, confirms the conquest of evil and the victory Boromir has won. It can be presumed that Boromir, as a deathbed penitent who has sacrificed his life in an act of love for his friends, is en route to a heavenly reward, which is presumably the victory Aragorn speaks of, and the fruit of the conquest of sin. Thus, it seems the person in the Fellowship of the Ring who represents us, that's men, remember we talked about that the last chapter? Is not a Judas figure, after all, but more like a figure of St. Mary Magdalene, the repentant sinner who is destined to live happily ever after. I thought that was pretty cool.
Very. I'd forgotten at least about our discussion last chapter about how Boromir is, in many ways, the most human of all the characters, and therefore the
by
most
default.
Relatable. Yeah.
Right.
and that his coming clean, his repentance here is it bodes well for a character that we identified with.
Yeah, it's also lucky, and this is important too, because he's lucky that he had a clear head, has the bravery and sincerity to ask for forgiveness in a case like this. You know, he does it, it's good for his own sake, because it really isn't actually easy to do. Like, the more you sin and everything like that, the harder it is to actually be truly sorry and really want true forgiveness and to go on and to correct your mistakes. So he's lucky that, you know, he probably didn't sin worse or didn't mull over this temptation for the ring much longer. Because, yeah, it would have been harder to give this up. But also, him admitting all this stuff, it helps Aragorn figure out his plan for the rest of this chapter. Like, what's he going to do next? So, like, his act actually has worldly benefits as well. You know? It is kind of tough that it's like, well, in my eyes, this penance, it required his life, which is, that's pretty big.
Yeah.
But then again, better, you know, a holy death than what Tolkien had been planning in some early outlines was Boromir was going to go back to Minas Tirith and somehow end up being a traitor to Gondor, even because he's going to go so crazy or something. So it's like, yeah, well, at least he got a good end here.
Right.
It's like, can't go on in the story, but his story has a happy end.
Right. And as you just mentioned, in a weird way, you know, he sends Frodo off on his quest in the last chapter through his actions. That's like the spark for Frodo, and then here as well, this is kind of a sign for Aragorn too, for Aragorn to make up his mind.
So, as we'll discuss, time's precious in order to follow the hobbits, whichever way they went. But Legolas and the others still recognize that they can't leave Boromir's body to rot.
Especially not surrounded by orcs. "Then let us lay him in a boat with his weapons and the weapons of his vanquished foes," said Aragorn. "We will send him to the falls of Rauros and give him to Anduin. The river of Gondor will take care, at least, that no evil creature dishonors his bones."
So this is kind of interesting. I don't know. This seems to me Tolkien values a proper burial. You know, everything can wait. This is important, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
So they take Boromir's body to the river. They're going to put him in one boat, and then the other three are going to go in the other boat. The third boat's missing, but we'll talk about that in a little bit. And so they're going to put him up there with all, like, the weapons and everything. They're going to send him down the river, and the river's going to protect him, and that'll be his burial send-off.
Right. In part because they don't have time to actually bury him, right?
Correct.
And they don't want to burn him.
Yeah, they have to just do something, you know, that's honorable.
Right.
And they said the river is somehow going to protect him, but we'll address that too. So here's this long passage. It's big highlight, great scene in Lord of the Rings. I think we just have to read it. I don't know how you can pass this one up.
So. Yeah. And in a way, I feel like this passage is sort of the ending of the Fellowship.
I mean, that's how the movie chose to do it.
Well, yeah, that's true. That's true. We were left in suspense, and then we're given this now, but this really ties off the end of the Fellowship.
Let's talk at the end if we think this chapter really should have been at the end or if it fits here. You know?
Okay, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
"Now they laid Boromir in the middle of the boat that was to bear him away. The gray hood and elven cloak they folded and placed beneath his head. They combed his long dark hair and arrayed it upon his shoulders. The golden belt of Lorien gleamed about his waist. His helm they set beside him, and across his lap they laid the cloven horn and the hilts and shards of his sword. Beneath his feet they put the swords of his enemies. Then fastening the prow to the stern of the other boat, they drew him out into the water. They rowed sadly along the shore. Turning into the swift-running channel, they passed the green sward of Parth Gelen. The steep sides of Tol Brandir were glowing. It was now mid-afternoon. As they went south, the fume of Rauros rose and shimmered before them, a haze of gold. The rush and thunder of the falls shook the windless air. Sorrowfully, they cast loose the funeral boat. There Boromir lay, restful, peaceful, gliding upon the bosom of the flowing water. The stream took him while they held their own boat back with their paddles. He floated by them, and slowly his boat departed, waning to a dark spot against the golden light, and then suddenly it vanished. Rauros roared on unchanging. The river had taken Boromir, son of Denethor, and he was not seen again in Minas Tirith, standing as he used to upon the White Tower in the morning. But in Gondor, in after days, it was long said that the elven boat rowed past the falls in the foaming pool, and bore him down through Osgiliath, and past the many mouths of Anduin, out into the great sea at night under the stars." For a while, the three companions remained silent, gazing after him. Then Aragorn spoke.
"They will look for him from the White Tower," he said, "but he will not return from the mountains or from the sea." Then slowly he began to sing. "Through Rohan over fen and field, where the long grass grows, the west wind comes walking, and about the walls it goes. What news from the west, O wandering wind, do you bring to me tonight? Have you seen Boromir the Tall, by moon or by starlight? I saw him ride over seven streams, over waters wide and gray. I saw him walk in empty lands until he passed away. In the shadows of the north I saw him then no more. The northwind may have heard the horn of the son of Denethor. O Boromir, from the high walls westward I look afar, but you came not from the empty lands where no men are."
Then Legolas sang, "From the mouths of the sea the south wind flies, from the sandhills and the stones. The wailing of the gulls it bears, and at the gate it moans. What news from the south, O sighing wind, do you bring to me at eve? Where now is Boromir the fair? He tarries, and I grieve. Ask not of me where he doth dwell. So many bones there lie on the white shores and the dark shores under the stormy sky. So many have passed down Anduin to find the flowing sea. Ask of the north wind news of them the north wind sends to me. O Boromir, beyond the gate the seaward roads run south. but you came not with the wailing gulls from the gray sea's mouth.
Then Aragorn sang again. From the gate of the kings the north wind rides, and past the roaring falls, and clear and cold about the tower its loud horn calls. What news from the north, O mighty wind, do you bring to me today? What news of Boromir the bold, for he is long away? Beneath Aman Hen I heard his cry. There many foes he fought. His cloven shield, his broken sword, they were to water brought. His head so proud, his face so fair, his limbs they laid to rest. And Rauros, golden Rauros falls, bore him upon its breast. O Boromir, the tower of the guard, shall never northward gaze. To Rauros, golden Rauros falls, until the end of days.
So they ended. Then they turned their boat and drove it, with all the speed they could, against the stream, back to Parth Galen. "You left the east wind to me," said Gimli, "but I will say naught of it."
"That is as it should be," said Aragorn. "In Minas Tirith they endure the east wind, but they do not ask it for tidings. But now Boromir has taken his road, and we must make haste to choose our own." Aww, that was cool. Sad, yeah, but cool.
Definitely.
Yeah.
I mean, one, it's a nice and it sounds like a pretty epic and beautiful send-off for Boromir. Going down in this kind of a raid in this canoe, being sent over a waterfall, and then presumably on out to the ocean beyond. It's like very beautiful. But then Aragorn and Legolas just break into song. Out of nowhere, they've just composed this like...
Well, I was about to say, I think that's the kind of thing where if Lord of the Rings had really happened... Uh-huh. No way that there was like a song like this. Maybe they did actually compose it on their adventures later. They probably could not have sung this like spur of the moment, right?
Well, certainly not. Like no reasonable character could right on the spot come up with a song. But maybe we're led to believe that like in the kind of the tales of old, some like this old mythology that was part of how people like kind of paid honor to something. So singing a song to honor somebody was just like...
Right,
you could do that at the snap of a finger, almost, and maybe also that Aragorn and Legolas are such wise and powerful characters that they're able to just have this song and sing it right there.
No, this is the stuff that a scribe inserts years later. Like he comes up with the author, like the redactor, the author. This is the kind of stuff that they insert.
But
I'm not saying Aragorn and Legolas didn't sing a song at this time, but I don't think it was this good.
Would you say it's still in keeping though with the old mythology?
Like epics, but yeah,
where you get a funeral song or something like this.
Yeah, and it's the same with the epic dialogue that characters have in battle scenes, mm-hmm. like in the middle of like a huge battle raging on all sides of them. They're not actually saying these big, memorable lines, especially when they'd be breathing super heavy and just, you know, it's chaos all around, you know. But that's the kind of stuff that like, these scribes probably add in later.
Right.
That's the tall tale element of it. Mm-hmm. But not to say it's wrong, not to say it isn't. You know, it's untrue. Mm-hmm. It totally adds to the story, and it should be there.
And maybe it's kind of like an old-fashioned way, like, you know, in modern literature, we would think of, like, the many ways where somebody's mindset or somebody's thinking is portrayed, whether it's dialogue or flashback or whatever. Like, we've developed all these kind of modern storytelling mechanisms to paint the picture that's not literally said.
Yeah.
But in these older stories, that's maybe part of that strategy is like overlaying a more epic and beautiful song over someone else's dialogue was like was a literary strategy to paint a deeper picture.
Yeah, and I'm a fan of it. Like, let's set the record straight. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think it's awesome. A couple things I was thinking. This might be his ideal warrior's funeral. You know, obviously they're still constrained by time and just mm-hmm. ability to put something together, but I feel like this is like the proper send-off he probably wanted to make, maybe for like fallen companions in war that he saw, you know? Like, I feel like, because like this...
Tolkien, you mean?
Yeah, Tolkien himself. Mm-hmm. Like, this was absolutely the best they could do, and they did it within time constraints.
Not to mention, Boromir theoretically is passing back through and past his homeland.
Yeah,
which is better than being buried at the very border of it, I would say.
Right. Well, they got it. I mean, he was within the old bounds of Gondor too when he died. But yeah.
Yeah.
One other thing.
Okay.
Rauros. Are we thinking this is Niagara Falls big, or if there's like a couple steps to it with maybe like some rapid sections? What do we think?
This sounds like Niagara Falls.
Okay, so this is why I said we got to talk. We have to mention that these elf boats don't sink. Like, for a while, I was convinced this is the biggest bullcrap of Lord of the Rings, that his body can fall over falls and the boat's just not utterly destroyed. But apparently it's not, because you read the one line, like, yeah, it makes it to Anduin. Or, I mean, it makes it all the way down to Anduin to the Great Sea, you know, and floats out. So, I don't know. I always thought that was weird, though, but, yeah, I guess I'm on board with the Niagara Falls besides that. Like, how do the weapons stay in? Like, they put all the orc swords at his feet. You know? Like, how do...
Well, this, I feel like this goes hand in hand with, like, how many calories are in lambus bread.
Maybe slightly more sophisticated than that.
Okay. Anyways, I feel like it's pretty improbable that the boat could stay afloat going over a giant waterfall, the way this has all been described. But, on the other hand, it seems like Boromir is being borne by some kind of holy protecting force.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, we don't know that it makes it over the falls. It's just said he was never seen in Gondor again.
No, he wasn't seen again in Minas Tirith, Clifford.
Okay.
Not Gondor.
I know.
Well, we can't say that. Okay, all right, yeah. Now let's move on to the Hobbits.
So, where are the Hobbits?
So, interesting enough, this is the first chapter with no Hobbits in it.
Amazing. That's pretty crazy. Yeah, that's the first chapter for this entire saga.
But Hobbits do still dominate most of this chapter. Besides the Boromir funeral stuff, the whole question is, all right, where are they? Like, what's going on? Mm-hmm. You know, they're the primary focus.
Yeah, so, I mean, if we're going to put ourselves in Aragorn's shoes for a second... What do we know?
Well, hold on. Let's just establish too. From the last chapter, we know where Frodo and Sam are. Correct?
Yes.
Yeah. But the characters don't. So just remember that. I almost forgot that when I was making the notes here. Like, I was going to treat the audience like we don't know where Frodo and Sam is. And then I remembered, wait, we definitely covered this last chapter. I'm allowed to say this. So what we're going to start... Yes. So we're starting to see something new here. He's going to start doing entrelacement.
Entrelacement?
Is that how you pronounce it? Seriously?
Is it... You're talking about the French word?
Yeah, it's French. Yeah.
It would be something like that. Entrelacement.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, whatever. Anyways, the Icelandic word for a short story is pedater. Pedater?
Potato. No,
that is not what it says. There's only one vowel with like five consonants.
Yeah, something like that. Pedater.
Pedater. Okay, we're saying pedater, which means a thread. And then several pediter. Pediter?
Pediter? Something like that?
Anyways. Pediter. That means threads, right? So if you twist the whole thing together, you make a saga. So now, in this whole coming book, just like start getting ready for it, he's going to start crisscrossing storylines.
Wait. So I don't know if that was clear enough. The word in Icelandic for a short story is the same word as thread.
Yes.
That's cool. And so, okay, so many short stories together makes a saga. Many threads together. Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so going forward, they're going to be jumping, chapter will basically be devoted to like one character, but then they're going to jump back and forth chapter to chapter with different storylines going on. And we just want to mention it here because we already saw it, like Frodo and Sam set out in the last chapter. We're not going to hear from them for a while, but he has more than just entertaining storytelling as like a reason for doing all this crisscross narration, as we're going to see, and we'll get into that as it kind of presents itself.
Okay.
But yeah, credit to Tolkien that he has more of a point, unlike George R. R. Martin. That's why it's taking forever, is because he just thought he was hot and you could combine like literally 25 different storylines, and then it's like, no, you can't. It's taking way too much time to figure out how to line them all up. That's why those books are not done. That's probably the single reason. Okay, so anyways, back to what we know. Aragorn found Boromir dying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Boromir admits that he had tried to steal the ring from Frodo, so Aragorn's got that noted. That's probably why Frodo left, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he says the orcs took the halflings, but he doesn't say which ones. So what's Aragorn going to do here? Legolas and Gimli come. They had fought the orcs in another area. So they had, like, Legolas had spent all his arrows. Like, I think he even has to pick up orc arrows, which is kind of weird.
Yeah.
But yeah, you want to, should we do this quote here?
Yeah.
Boromir is dead, said Aragorn. I am unscathed, for I was not here with him. He fell defending the hobbits while I was away upon the hill.
The hobbits, cried Gimli. Where are they then? Where is Frodo?
I don't know, answered Aragorn wearily. Before he died, Boromir told me that the orcs had bound them. He did not think that they were dead. I sent him to follow Merry and Pippin, but I did not ask him if Frodo or Sam were with him. Not until it was too late. All that I have done today has gone amiss. What is to be done now?
First we must tend the fallen, said Legolas. We cannot leave him lying like carrion among these foul orcs. But we must be swift, said Gimli. He would not wish us to linger. We must follow the orcs, or there is hope that any of our company are living prisoners.
But we do not know whether the Ringbearer is with them or not, said Aragorn. Are we to abandon him? Must we not seek him first? An evil choice is now before us. Okay, so, setting up the whole tension of this chapter. Mm-hmm. Like, what are they going to do? We're now putting on detective hats. We're going to Sherlock Holmes this thing. And all the awesome clarity that we had at the end of Fellowship last chapter, instantly gone. Like, we don't know what's going on at all now, right? You know, it's back to chaos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, they're going through the dead. They find two elf knives. So presumably those were the hobbit weapons, right?
Mm-hmm. And the orcs couldn't take them because they know that they're basically like cursed against...
Yeah. Blah. Yeah. so then the orcs don't look like they're Mordor orcs. Some are from the north, so probably presumably Moria. And then some are even stranger. The strange orcs weren't even dressed or armed like typical orcs. Like, on their shields, there's a white hand, and then they have some S logo all over the place. So Gimli assumes the S is for Sauron.
Nay, said Legolas, Sauron does not use the elf runes.
Neither does he use his right name, nor permit it to be spelt or spoken, said Aragorn. And he does not use white. The orcs in the service of Barad-dûr use the sign of the red eye. He stood for a moment and thought, S is for Saruman, I guess. He said at length, there is an evil foot in Isengard, and the West is no longer safe. It is as Gandalf feared. By some means, the traitor Saruman has had news of our journey. It is likely, too, that he knows of Gandalf's fall. Pursuers from Moria have escaped the vigilance of Lórien, and they may have avoided the land and come to Isengard by other paths. Orcs travel fast, but Saruman has many ways of learning news. Do you remember the birds?
Well, we have no time to ponder riddles, said Gimli. Let us bear Boromir away.
But after we must guess the riddles, if we are to choose our course rightly, said Aragorn.
Maybe there is no right choice, said Gimli.
Interesting last line there, too. Okay, so this is when they go and prepare Boromir's funeral. So Aragorn watches the body, Legolas and Gimli go get the boats, and that's when they notice that, hey, the third boat's totally missing. There's only two boats there. So, again, we know that the hobbits were on the move. Some of them took a boat, right? Of course, we already know which ones took that boat. So, after the funeral, Aragorn goes and examines the campsite. He finds footprints all around it, but they don't provide him any good info. But he does notice that two packs are missing. One of them's clearly Sam's, because it's the biggest one. And then Aragorn goes and attempts an explanation. So he says, this is the answer. Frodo has gone by boat, and his servant has gone with him. Frodo must have returned while we were all away. I met Sam going up the hill and told him to follow me, but plainly he did not do so. He guessed his master's mind and came back here before Frodo had gone. He did not find it easy to leave Sam behind.
But why should he leave us behind, and without a word, said Gimli. That was a strange deed.
And a brave deed, said Aragorn. Sam was right, I think. Frodo did not wish to lead any friend to death with him in Mordor, but he knew that he must go himself. Something happened after he left that overcame his fear and doubt.
Maybe hunting orcs came on him, and he fled, said Legolas.
He fled, certainly, said Aragorn, but not, I think, from orcs. What he thought was the cause of Frodo's sudden resolve and flight, Aragorn did not say. The last words of Boromir he long kept secret. I don't know. What do we think of that?
Well, Aragorn the detective seems to have solved the riddle pretty well.
Yeah.
And, yeah, peculiar that he doesn't share the secret that he learned from Boromir. But on the other hand, it's kind of... I feel like it's respectful.
Yeah, he wants to. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. He doesn't want to bash the memory right away.
Right, exactly.
I mean, that's something that will probably have to be addressed at the end of it if there's a happy ending to this. But yeah,
right, and not to mention it doesn't really change the outcome either way.
Right.
If he can reasonably speculate that Frodo has gone across the river, saying the exact reason why, it's not going to change the current situation.
Yeah. Also, I'd say Aragorn, he's pretty competent and cool in general, which is sweet, you know. Uh-huh. But just remember that he is a ranger, and, like, the rangers are really good at this kind of tracking stuff. Like, remember, yeah. This is the guy that found Gollum after, you know, him and Gandalf searched for probably over a decade. Mm-hmm. Looking for the creature, you know. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, Aragorn, this is bread and butter. If it's not fighting, what he's best at.
and it's a little bit more of what I was saying earlier, where Aragorn, we see Aragorn in, like, totally lucid. It's like probably the closest we are to what I always get my terms mixed up, like third person personal, almost first person, where we're, like, seeing Aragorn's, like, the gears of his mind turning.
Yeah.
And we're hearing his doubts and concerns.
Well, somebody has to be the new main character, you know, because you can't do that from, like, the Sam or Frodo perspective or something, because they're gone.
Right. And meanwhile, Legolas and Gimli have dialogue and are contributing to the plot, but they're basically bouncing ideas off of Aragorn.
Yeah.
They're, like, input, and then we're hearing Aragorn thinking through what they're saying.
Yeah, this is kind of important to remember, too. Probably, like, 98% of the time in Lord of the Rings, that character that they're getting in the head of is the least aware of what's going on. I mean, now, maybe Legolas and Gimli were more so here, but, like, all three were just so lost that it's like, all right, whatever, we'll just focus on Aragorn, because he was the one with mm-hmm. Boromir's death, and you had to actually cover that in person, probably.
Right.
But just keep that in mind, like, going forward, because that's, like I said, 98% of the time that is true.
That we're experiencing the story from the
least knowledgeable character.
So it's kind of like if it were film or something, you're always like, the camera angle is always like facing up for like the shot from below.
Yeah, yeah.
So, okay.
All right, let's finish off this last little bit here about what they're going to decide to do.
Mm-hmm. Our choice then, said Gimli, is either to take the remaining boat and follow Frodo, or else to follow the orcs on foot. There's little hope either way. We have already lost precious hours.
Let me think, said Aragorn, and now I may make a right choice and change the evil fate of this unhappy day. He stood silent for a moment. I will follow the orcs, he said at last. I would have guided Frodo to Mordor and gone with him to the end. But if I seek him now in the wilderness, I must abandon the captives to torment and death. My heart speaks clearly at last. The fate of the bearer is in my hands no longer. The company has played its part. Yet we that remain cannot forsake our companions while we have strength left. Come, we will go now. Leave all that can be spared behind. We will press on by day and dark.
So, awesome. Aragorn has made his decision at last. Seemingly in just a few seconds.
No, there was a... He stood silent for a moment.
Clearly, though, he's been thinking about this for a while.
Well, we saw the whole last couple chapters after Lothlorien that he was just waiting for something to kind of almost decide it for him. And we basically really kind of got that. Like, yes, he made a choice here. Mm-hmm. So, again, like, free will versus, like, kind of destiny or fate or providence mm-hmm. and stuff. But really, this isn't much of a choice. He's almost respecting Frodo's choice to go alone. And then he's saying, like, well, you know, these other two, they're absolutely screwed if we can't get to them. So we gotta help them out.
It's almost as though he's got many things laid on. Like, it seems at face value to still be a really tough choice. But there's the fact that Frodo's already left. And he feels that was a good decision, brave decision by Frodo. And he doesn't want to interfere with that.
Right.
There's the urgency of trying to save Merry and Pippin from captivity and death. There's the death of Boromir and learning of Boromir's betrayal. And all of these things could be taken as signs that are urging Boromir to basically follow through on... Sorry, excuse me.
Urging Aragorn.
Urging Aragorn to follow through on Boromir's quest to save Minas Tirith. Urging Aragorn to save the other hobbits, to stay away from Frodo. In some ways, I feel like even though... We can assume Aragorn is not subject to the same temptation of the ring that Boromir was. It was like a warning to Aragorn as well.
Yeah.
That maybe if he had followed Frodo, he would have been, you know, still kind of subject to the pull of the ring.
Yeah, this reminds me of back when they set out in Rivendell. There was that whole conversation that Elrond said, like, hey, you guys don't take oaths, you're going to go all the way. You know, the only one that's taken an oath is Frodo and Sam. you know, you guys don't quite know what you're getting into. But then he also had this quote here that I just want to reread. The Ringbearer is setting out on his quest of Mount Doom. On him alone is any charge laid, neither to cast away the ring, nor to deliver it to any servant of the enemy, nor indeed to let any handle it, save members of the company and the council, and only in the gravest need. The others go with him as free companions to help him on his way. You may tarry or come back, or turn aside into other paths as chance allows. The further you go, the less easy it will be to withdraw. Yet no oath or bond is laid on you to go any further than you will. For you do not yet know the strength of your hearts and cannot foresee what each may meet upon the road. So this is exactly right. Like, this is exactly, like, Elrond, I don't know. Elrond probably didn't see this for certain, but he probably knew something like this would happen. You know, this is exactly the point where Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli, yeah, they're choosing to do it, but they are supposed to just move on. Like, this was supposed to be the end of the Fellowship. Like, we got Frodo this far. He's got to finish it off himself because we'll be more useful in other places.
Right. And it almost feels like, maybe I'm reading into this too much, but from Tolkien's experience in World War One that we've talked about before, like, you could imagine in a military setting, there's like the kind of baseline honor of like, no man left behind. We've got to stick through the mission always. Yeah. But at the same time, I think you probably learn or come to understand that like, certain sacrifices have to be made.
And, well, I mean, no man left behind here. It's just a question of which group, you know, because I mean, it's
Merry and Pippin are taken,
and they are the ones that are more likely screwed, being surrounded by an army of orcs.
Right. And I think maybe it's like, you at some point take that ethos, like, maybe you need to reconsider the broader mission. Like, this larger mission to destroy the ring, for example. You don't need to have tunnel vision and just do that all the time. Like, you might have to pause and reconsider exactly, like, what the best thing you could do at that moment is. Might mean going in the other direction.
Yeah. Hey, so this is where the movie chose to end it. Do we think this chapter belongs as the first chapter? I guess we haven't read the rest of this book, theoretically. But do you think this belongs where it is now, or should it have been at the end? Like, was this, like, I did think it was abrupt to just, you know, second page of a book, kill off Boromir.
It is very abrupt, but I think it belongs where it does, because this is like the perfect cue off for Aragorn and Legolas and Gimli beginning a new quest, and the last book was the exact ending of the Fellowship with the leaving of Frodo and Sam.
Yeah.
That's where the Fellowship was broken, not the death of Boromir, even if they happened at the same moment.
I agree that it should not have been at the end of the last book, but I still don't really like that Boromir's dead by page 2 of this book.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't know what you do about
that. Well, and then another aspect of that is there's the synopsis at the start of this book.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have
that? No, I don't have that in my book. Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know where that...
I've read it before in other versions, but yeah.
Okay. I think it was written by Tolkien, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Yeah.
No, I remember I found him funny.
Yeah, it's like as if he had to write the back, you know, like the back cover of a book.
Yeah.
As if he had to write the back cover of his own book.
But he's writing it for Fellowship, and it's
all right of the Fellowship, right? To give you, this is like the little 30-second recap at the start of a TV show,
right?
To say, like, on the last episode of.
Because, you know, maybe you read these books a couple months apart, because it's like you truck through Fellowship and it's like, okay, I want to read something else.
Or when he released them one by one, right? Or did they go
I think there's only like a month or two gap between the first two, but then there's like a year. People had to wait like a year for Return of the King, which is like, if you were reading that live, it's like, man, that blows.
By modern standards, though, that's not that bad. It's like a Harry Potter book.
I mean, we're used to TV shows that where we'll wait for the stuff.
That's true. Anyways, it gives this quick little synopsis in here, which is an amazingly brief and efficient summary of the Fellowship. Like, you know, he hits every key point and describes the challenges at stake. But in this synopsis at the end, it reveals information that we didn't get at the end of the Fellowship.
Hmm.
I'll give you a little snippet over here. When it became clear that the Ringbearer was resolved to continue his hopeless journey to the land of the enemy, Boromir attempted to seize the ring by force. The first part ended with the fall of Boromir to the lure of the ring, with the escape and disappearance of Frodo and his servant Samwise, and the scattering of the remainder of the Fellowship by a sudden attack of orc soldiers, some in the service of the Dark Lord of Mordor, some of the traitor Saruman of Isengard. The quest of the Ringbearer already seemed overtaken by disaster.
And I remember to mention it in our episode, when Sam came running to the shore to see Frodo, he heard yelling behind, like there's a line, like there was a bunch of shouts behind, and Sam ignored it, you know, so presumably yes, that is the orcs attacking them all. But yeah, interesting that the synopsis says that, and then it's like, oh, okay, well that's going to help as soon as you read page one, you know, where Aragorn hears cries. Yeah.
Yes, yes.
The chapter ends, though. They're getting ready to depart. Legolas says it'll be easy to follow the orcs' trail because they trample everything. And then Aragorn says, but they go with great speed for all that, said Aragorn, and they do not tire. And later we may have to search for our path in hard, bare lands.
Well, after them, then, said Gimli. Dwarves, too, can go swiftly, and they do not tire sooner than orcs. But it will be a long chase. They have a long start.
Yes, said Aragorn. We shall need all the endurance of dwarves. But come, with hope or without hope, we will follow the trail of our enemies, and woe to them if we prove the swifter. We will make such a chase as shall be counted a marvel among the three kindreds, elves, dwarves, and men. Forth the three hunters.
Like a deer he sprang away. Through the trees he sped. On and on he led them, tireless and swift, now that his mind was at last made up. The woods about the lake they left behind. Long slopes they climbed, dark, hard-edged against the sky, already red with sunset. Dusk came. They passed away, gray shadows in a stony land.
All right, Clifford, we're back again.
Indeed we are.
Yeah. Oh, man, that's louder. All right, whatever. We're going with it. It'll be fine.
Okay.
All right,
should I should be further away from that. That's what you're saying.
Oh, maybe.
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll all stay right back here.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be good.
Okay.
All right, so what's been up?
Well, I'm in Denver right now.
Mm-hmm.
We are in the same place.
Yep.
Possibly for the first...
No, we did the one... We did the Christmas one.
Oh, okay.
Which was the Smaug and Bilbo chapter.
Okay, that's right.
And then other than that, yeah, I don't think we... Well, we did the walking thing in Rocky Mountain last year.
That's true.
But that was just goofy. Mm-hmm. I was probably up there for our dumbest episode.
Well, anyways, I'm in Patrick's backyard. I've been camping in Colorado for about 5 days.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful summer day.
Yep. What have you been doing for the rest of the summer?
Lockdown and quarantine.
Oh,
and
yeah. You really haven't been doing anything fun.
No. Finally got a little vacation in, and it felt so good.
Yeah.
Camping and hiking for the past week. Saw a big bull moose. I saw a bear in the dark.
Ooh.
Yeah, it was sweet. How about you? What have you been up to?
I just got back from a family vacation in Glacier. That was pretty sick.
Cool.
There was totally stuff.
How many bears did you see?
One. Okay. But there was stuff that looked like the Silmarillion all over the place. It's nice. Like, yes. Because, like, Lord of the Rings, it's like, well, that looks like New Zealand, whatever.
Yeah.
But there's stuff in the Silmarillion that's like, yes, this is what it would look like. But
cool.
Yeah. Okay, so this was the end of chapter one. Let's see. Looking at the notes of when I was editing it. Mention Elrond saying fate would decide which way. Galadriel also has a line at the beginning of Lothlórien, or beginning of leaving Lothlórien. Okay, well, I mentioned that. Oh, okay. So at this point, one of my favorite things that we have to mention from reading the whole histories of Middle Earth. So these are all like Christopher Tolkien's notes.
Right.
So like volumes 6 through 9.5 are the drafts of Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
So it takes them 3.5 books to go over the drafts of 3 books of Lord of the Rings.
Wow.
Yeah. So anyways, there's one. It was around this time, like around when he was writing this chapter, Christopher Tolkien was trying to date back when this was written. So what he uses, I'm just going to read this quote here because this is how he did it. This is from the drafts of the Departure of Boromir chapter. So Christopher Tolkien says, "While working on the book, my father would sometimes doodle by writing, often in careful or even elaborate script. names or phrases from a newspaper that lay beside him or on which his paper rested. On the back of the sheet carrying this outline, an examination paper, like most of the paper they used, that's what this was being written on, he wrote out so many such odds and ends as Chinese bombers, North Sea convoy, and among them are Mar River?
Mar.
Yeah. And Japanese attack melee.
In Malaya.
Malaya. It is out of the question, I think, that these writings on the verso should come from a different time from the text on the recto. Oh, those are the sides.
Oh, very fancy.
Yeah, geez. They're way too... God, so British. Okay. It is certain, therefore, that the time was now the winter of 1941 to 42. Because, that's when the Japanese were attacking Malaya, how he picked this up, because it was in the newspapers from that time period. This obviously agrees with my father's statement in the foreword to the second edition of The Lord of the Rings that he came to Lothlorien and the Great River late in 1941. He said that almost a year had passed since he halted by Balin's tomb in Moria, but I have argued, I think with good reason, that he stopped, in fact, at the end of 1939. To maintain this view, it must be supposed, of course, that something like 2 years, 1940 through 1941, passed between the halt in Moria and the point we now have reached. Interesting. I thought that was worth the read, because that's just one of my favorite details about how he's like... Because Tolkien did not date anything when he wrote it, so it's like...
His own son's doing archaeology to figure out what he was writing when.
Yeah, of his whole notebook room, because he didn't throw out anything from 50 years of archives of notes.
It's so amazing.
Yeah, and he had to order all of them. And so sometimes he had to use tricks he was doodling about, this time period about, what's on the newspaper headlines.
Uh-huh.
Besides that, the only other thing I got is next week, big episode, we do, in addition to covering the chapter, we do a certain movie review for reasons that will be disclosed next week on one of my favorite movies, Chariots of Fire. So definitely give that a listen. Or give that a watch beforehand, because it'll enhance your experience of the review. Or you can listen to the review and then you'll want to watch the movie.
Uh-huh. Easily.
Yeah. Anything else?
No.
Yeah, that's pretty here. Long. Yeah, nice. All right.
Thanks, y'all.
For a while, the three companions remained silent, gazing after Boromir. Then Aragorn spoke. "They will look for him from the White Tower," he said. "But he will not return from mountain or from sea." Then slowly he began to sing. "Through Rohan over fen and field where the long grass grows, the west wind comes walking and about the walls it goes. What news from the west, O wandering wind, you bring to me tonight? Have you seen Boromir the Tall by moon or by starlight? I saw him ride over seven streams, over waters wide and grey. I saw him walk in empty lands until he passed away into the shadows of the north. I saw him then no more. The north wind may have heard the horn of the son of Boromir. Oh, Boromir, from the high walls westward I looked afar, but you came not from the empty lands where no men are." Then Legolas sang. "From the mouths of the sea the south wind flies, from the sandhills and the stones. The wailing of the gulls it bears and of the gated moan. What news from the south, O sighing wind, you bring to me at eve? Where now is Boromir the fair? He tarries, and I grieve. Ask not of me where he doth dwell. So many bones there lie on the white shores and the dark shores under the stormy sky. So many have passed down Anduin to find the flowing sea. Ask of the north wind news of them the north wind sends to me. Oh, Boromir, beyond the gate the seaward road runs south, but you came not with the wailing gulls from the grey sea's mouth." Then Aragorn sang again. "From the gate of kings the north wind rise, and past the roaring falls, and clear and cold about the tower its loud horn calls. What news from the north, O mighty wind, you bring to me today? What news of Boromir the Bold, for he is long away. Beneath Amon Hen I heard his cry, there many foes he fought. His cloven shield, his broken sword, they to the water brought. His head so proud, his face so fair, his limbs they laid to rest. And Raros, golden Raros, falls Borim upon his breast. O Boromir, the Tower of God shall ever northward gaze to Raros, golden Raros, falls at the end of days.